there is now.
And welcome to the SBK Crypto Podcast. 15 minutes of crypto fame.
My name's Charles Story. I will be your host the next 15 minutes. We're coming live from the city of London, Shoreditch. So let's get down to business. The current market cap for the crypto space is $265 billion. The reason I'm bringing this up, just to kick things off, is because this time last year, it was a very similar market cap. And it was interesting because this time last year, if you looked a year ahead, you wouldn't think it would be the same. I mean, I was one of those individuals. I'm sure everyone else was out there as well. But if you look at where we were this time last year from a technological perspective, and you look at where we are now, and you look at the advancements, and you look at where we were and where we've come to and where we are now, we're third generation blockchains that are active. We have, we're trying to scale Ethereum. There's many different things that are happening, and there's many different advancements that we have made as a space, as a community, as a whole. So it's interesting to see the market cap of where it is today. Now the question is, are we hugely undervalued, which we believe, or has the market got it wrong at the minute? And I think that is the case. And as we all know, it's sentiment driven. But anyway, I just wanted to get that off my chest before we jumped into today's show. So today's show is going to be slightly different. Myself and Shane Kehoe, co-founder of SVK Crypto, were invited down to the Crypto Compare London Blockchain Summit event, or also known as MJAC, M-J-A-C. We arrived early this morning. That was being held by London Bridge, actually. A very iconic setting, absolutely beautiful day. It was very sunny. It was an old Billingsgate market, which is the old fish market for London. So very historic building that the event was being held in. It was probably, I would say 1,200 individuals who were present this morning. So that was great to see. What I really took away from it was one of the discussions that we heard. And the discussion was brought forward by Chris Bunesky, very famously known for one of the books that he's wrote. And he's also the co-founder of Placeholder Ventures. Chris Bunesky is one of the pioneers in the scene, I would argue, and he has done a lot of research and written a lot regarding valuations. So the keynote that he gave was the relative and fundamental valuation approaches to crypto assets. So before we jump into his extract, what we recorded of that, I'm just going to give you a little bit of background to his keynote. So he was talking about crypto networks and how they use crypto assets for the supply side and demand side of information networks. Now this is where we find a new way to organize and incentivize a new way of human activity. So let's hear it from Chris.
And it's much more an innovation along the lines of what in the early 1600s, the creation of the joint stock company allowed merchants to raise capital to fund long-term journeys and spread the risk, and the investors would participate in the gains. We are really finding a new way to do this in the digital world. And so in 2016, I put out a paper with Coinbase claiming that Bitcoin was the first of its kind in a new asset class. And at this time, most people laughed because the aggregate network value of crypto was $10 billion. We're now roughly 30x later from that, and a lot of people are coming back to the drawing board saying, okay, maybe there is something here. Though the bears are coming out of the woodwork given the current market action, but this is a recursive cycle that happens time and again. And speculation lays the foundation for innovation. So I'm not personally concerned, but we will be talking about valuation for those of you that are concerned about the market. So if you agree crypto is a new asset class, then unique value drivers will require new valuation methodologies. And I firmly believe this, but not everyone agrees this. So Professor Dan Duran, who's a famous valuations expert at NYU, has written in his blog, "I don't believe that cryptocurrencies are now or ever will be an asset class. you cannot value it or invest in it, you can only price it and trade it. So I give a lot of credence to Professor Devin Duran's background. He's done a lot more valuation work than I have. But lots of times, people who are indoctrinated in a prior way of thinking have a hard time shifting their mind to think about a new paradigm. And so I'll give my case for why I think you can value or derive a fundamental valuation for a lot of crypto networks. So like I said, we'll be going over relative and intrinsic or fundamental. And starting with relative valuations, currently the most common technique is using the network value. So I use the term network value instead of market cap because these are information networks, not companies. And network value is the number of coins outstanding multiplied by the price per coin. And this is actually quite a dangerous relative valuation technique to use because there's a lot of manipulation that goes on and a lot that's hidden beneath the surface. So to start this discussion, I'll read a string of tweets from Nick Carter where he says, "So Monero V is the latest version of something I call the market cap game. Part of the appeal of these forks is that they get to claim a supply of X million coins, but of course only a fraction circulate. So they get a glamour spot on CoinMarketCap with minimal liquidity. Why would anyone bid up the price? Because a fat market cap gets you a nice spot on all the ranking sites, and if you do it for long enough, investors FOMO into your coin. It's a marketing strategy, and you have extremely high leverage due to the tiny float." And so this is made worse by the fact that crypto assets are generally ranked by the circulating supply. And so if that circulating supply is manipulated, even just temporarily, a lot of investors will see that coin and in a very momentum-driven space, as Nick says, will FOMO into the coin. So to give some numbers and to dimension how bad this gets, if we go to CoinMarketCap, there's a way to rank by circulating supply and by total supply. And I did this for tokens, which are assets that circulate on top of other crypto networks. And the two top offenders at the time when I pulled the numbers were Exchange Union and Veritasil. And Exchange Union had a total supply that was worth $18 billion and a circulating supply that was worth $12 million. While Veritasium had a total supply that was $12.5 billion with a circulating supply that was worth $250 million. And this means that the Veritasium investors were expecting a 50x dilution, whether or not they knew it, and the Exchange Union investors were expecting a 1,500x dilution. And this is important because while some investors will look for the biggest assets and say invest in those biggest assets based on circulating supply, some value crypto investors will look for the undervalued assets. They'll say, hey, this crypto network has a lot of potential, but it's only worth $12 million. This could appreciate a lot. But if they don't also look at the total supply, then they're not taking into account the potential for dilution. And I just gave examples for things that have fixed supply, but the same thing applies to mined assets that have a time-consistent, rules-based monetary policy. And so, for example, if we look at Dash versus Bitcoin, Bitcoin is currently inflating at roughly 4% annually. In 2020, that will drop to 2%. This is, again, baked into the software, part of Bitcoin's monetary policy and the clearing and settling of Bitcoin transactions. Dash, slightly younger crypto asset, is current supply inflation is 9% annually. Neither of those numbers is that bad. But you look at Zcash, which launched in October of 2016. Zcash's supply will grow by 75% over the next year, which is a massive amount of dilution. And what this means is in order for Zcash's price to just tread water, stay flat, its utility has to keep pace with the rate of inflation. And I'm going to dig into this a little bit more. Before I do, I want to say I am a fan of the Zcash project. I spoke with Zuko about this before I did the presentation, and he was excited. He's like, you know, people need to know, they need to be educated about the way these things work, and he's concerned that people don't look into supply inflation enough. So here is Zcash's network value since inception. Had some turbulent times, as every early crypto asset does. And if I project out into the next 10 years, just using what is publicly known about Zcash's monetary policy, which is very similar to Bitcoin's, then at the end of 2028, I can expect, if Zcash as the asset appreciates 0%, for Zcash to be a $5 billion network. But if I'm a crypto asset investor and I'm earning a 0% expected annual rate of return, then I'm not a very good crypto asset investor. And so really, I would expect something like a 40% annual expected rate of return. This is just thinking about the discount rates that I use as a high growth equities analyst, where the weighted average cost of capital is 10 to 15%. You think about the risk of a crypto asset is 3 to 4 to 5x that. So 3x of 15% is more like 45%. So this would place Zcash at the end of 2028 at roughly a $200 billion network, which means you're expecting Zcash to be bigger than, actually much bigger than Bitcoin is today. And this is, again, just a thought exercise, because these assumptions are in the market, right? Well, certainly the rate of supply inflation is there, it's baked into the software, and then you all as investors have your own assumptions, your own expected rate of return, and combining those two, you can project the network value, the future network value that you need to earn that rate of return. Okay, so that was network value. A relatively simple metric, but the one that is most widely used in the relative valuation comparisons. I'm going to hop now to ratios. And so with a ratio, this is where we have a numerator and a denominator. And I'll start with a ratio just using two variables. And we can talk about more complex ratios at the end. So numerator tends to be a price metric. Denominator tends to be a utility metric. And the most common of these right now is the network value to transactions ratio. I get credit often for having created it. I didn't create it. Willy Woo created it on Twitter, and I just helped popularize it. And the reason I really liked it and originally called it the crypto PE ratio, though that confused people because crypto networks don't have cash flows, they don't have earnings, is because if you think about how a stock is priced in the stock market, it tends to be priced as a multiple of its earnings, because earnings are the utility to an investor that holds that stock. Similarly, with a blockchain-based crypto network, that base utility is transaction value. And so just as a stock is priced as a multiple of its earnings, you can make the argument that a crypto network should be priced as a multiple of its transaction value. And so that's really what the NBT ratio does, is it prices, using transaction value as a utility metric, it prices the network as a multiple of that transaction value. So to decompose how this is actually calculated, I'll share some graphs. So here's Bitcoin's network value ever since Mt. Gox launched, and we had a good price on log scale. And so that has, that's a famous chart. And here's a slightly less famous chart of Bitcoin's on-chain transaction value. And so I want to be clear, this is transaction value using Bitcoin's blockchain. This has nothing to do with trading volumes on Coinbase or Bitstamp or any of the exchanges. Although sometimes the exchanges do shuttle Bitcoin amongst them to clear and settle imbalances, and sometimes that is reflected in on-chain transaction volume, so that is a slight wrinkle in the data. But we can already see, if we overlay the two, how closely they map one another. And it certainly looks like on-chain transaction value is providing some kind of support to network value. So I'm going to divide now the blue line by a 90-day rolling average of the orange line, and that gives me the NBT ratio. And so it's clear that there's this range. It looks like it doesn't want to violate 200, it has this base just below 50, an average of 80. And the interesting thing with these ratios is, while it's weird to say, the fact of the market becomes the future theory of tomorrow. Because these ratios, traders will use them, people will base their investments off of them, and so people will tend to treat them as truth if they persist for long enough. Now, I also understand the argument of, well, they work until they don't, and if all of this stuff is worth zero, then this is just an illusion, a mirage. And I can understand and empathize with that argument, but if we look at other asset classes, these patterns tend to emerge and then be respected by the market over time. So the exploration we just went through was really comparing Bitcoin to itself longitudinally over time. But what's more exciting is comparing across crypto assets, because this is where investors, when they're looking, for example, within the equities market at different industries, they can give an idea of, okay, Facebook is priced at this multiple while Twitter is priced at this multiple, and they're both social media companies, so one is more richly priced by the market while another is less richly priced. I think we can do the same with crypto assets, but it's really important if we do that we're careful with the data, because as awesome as Crypto Compare is and has been doing for the industry, we're still just building these data platforms and learning best practices. So you always have to make sure that, especially if you're pulling data from different platforms, that you're pulling the exact same data for price and utility metrics. And even more importantly, that you should be comparing those two assets in the first place. So I would never compare Netflix's PE ratio to Intel's PE ratio. They're just totally different businesses to the world, just as I would never compare Bitcoin's MBT ratio to Ethereum's. I think of Bitcoin as a cryptocurrency, Ethereum as a crypto commodity, and they have very different architectures. And so that's an important consideration. So if we very carefully look at the MBT ratios of UTXO-based, so unspent transaction output, which is the way the architecture is constructed, cryptocurrencies, then we start to see somewhat of a pattern where Litecoin, being the silver to Bitcoin's gold, is the least richly valued, right? It's the lowest multiple of transaction value. Bitcoin's kind of right in the middle. You could say Zcash is somewhat undervalued because of that supply inflation rate. Decred, as a newer and governance-focused autonomous cryptocurrency, is slightly pricier based on future expectations of what that cryptocurrency will do. And then Dash and Bitcoin Cash kind of appear to be a richly valued anomaly based on the utility they provide the world. And so this can be done for different assets. Again, so long as you're careful with the comparisons that you're making. Within the relative valuation space, if you look at a lot of the other work done around other asset classes, we don't have to stop at two inputs. And specifically for crypto, what I've just been looking at is based on demand side drivers, so transaction value being the people using the services, but you can look at supply side strength, supply side being the computers or the humans that are providing the service that the demand side is consuming. And so this would be things like hash rate or number of nodes connected to the network, capital expenditure supporting the network, and I'll cover some of those now. So in terms of, say, a ratio that would use three variables, within the equity space we have the PEG ratio, where you calibrate PE for growth. And I think we could do the same, if we're careful, with the MBT ratio, calibrating it for growth. And so this would be something like, okay, in the last slide, Litecoin was priced at 23 times, but if it's only growing at, say, 10%, which is just an arbitrary number, then that ratio, that MBT, would be 230. Whereas maybe you take something like Decred, priced at 28 times, if you say, hey, this is growing at 50%, then the NVT ratio would be 56. And so when you calibrate for growth, you would actually start to see very different ratios that would show, are you over or underpaying for how quickly this crypto network is growing. There's also this NVTT ratio. So I said a little bit ago that with the NVT ratio, I don't include trading volume because I don't think, just as FX volume is not included in GDP metrics, I don't include it. But for reserve crypto assets, of which Bitcoin is one, and I would argue Ethereum or Ether is increasingly becoming one, one of the roles of a reserve asset is being used to purchase other assets. And so you could make the argument that one of that's a utility of a reserve crypto asset, and therefore you should have trading volume and transacting volume in the denominator. There's some good work that's being done using Metcalfe's law metrics in the denominator. So Metcalfe's law being the utility of a network is the square of the number of users of that network. And so as opposed to just using the raw number, actually squaring it, or there are different ways to approach Metcalfe's law. So if you search price to Metcalfe's law crypto, there's a good blog that was written about it not too long ago. And then turning to the supply side, I'm doing some work right now with CryptoLab Capital, specifically looking at network value to hash rate. But this capital expenditure to network value, what this gets at is if you look at the hash rate, say, of Bitcoin, you can divide Bitcoin's hash rate by the most common machine, which is an Antminer S9's hash rate, and you get from that division the number of machines, the minimum number of machines connected to the network. And once you have the number of machines connected to the network, you know the market price for those machines, and you multiply those two, and you get the capital expenditure. And I haven't run that number for a while, but it was around 500 million a few months ago, and it wouldn't surprise me if it's over a billion now, given how the hash rate's been growing. Once you have that capital expenditure to create the supply side, you can divide that by the network value, and what you get is basically the dollar value that has gone into the capital expenditure to support the network per dollar secured by the network. And so for things that plan to be a digital gold or a store of value, you would want to see those have a higher capital expenditure per dollar secured by the network. That was relative valuations, a quick exploration, and we'll dive into intrinsic valuations now, which are more contentious. So before I do, I want to read a quote from my mentor, Kathy Wood, who says, during the next few years, not only will disruptive innovation continue to change the way the world works, but it will render traditional gauges of economic activity inaccurate. And so this problem goes far beyond crypto. And there's a lot of problems within macroeconomics and accounting of how do we deal with the increasingly intangible nature of our economy, because clearly there are productivity gains, but many of the existing macro metrics do not reflect those productivity gains. And so with that as a preface, when I approach crypto networks, I approach them as a single or multi-service emerging economy. Again, these are not companies, right? They're not operated by a group of people that are extracting profit from the system. It's an open source software that uses a native unit of account to coordinate all of the economic agents in that system. And just because, as coming from Kathy's quote, just because the services provided are largely digital doesn't mean that they don't have specific unit economics or that they don't have value.
I thought that was a great talk, and I thought Chris brought up some really, really interesting points when you look at metrics for valuation in the crypto space. Thank you for your time and attention. That's a wrap. I got to bounce. We are absolutely inundated here at SVK Crypto. And we got to get back to it. As you can probably tell, I've got a bit of a cold. You probably hear that in my voice. But listen, as always, we deliver on the podcast every single day because that's what we do, deliver. That's a wrap. Thank you so much for your time and attention. Remember, as always, to check out our socials. Check us out on Telegram, SVK Space Crowd. Follow us on Twitter at @SVK_crypto. Email myself, cstory@svkcrypto, cstory@svkcrypto.com. Have a phenomenal evening, day, morning, afternoon, wherever you are in the world. That's a wrap.
You've been listening to an SVK Crypto Podcast original. Follow us on Twitter at @SVK_crypto. Email us on cstory@svkcrypto.com. Leave us a message on our website, www.svkcrypto.com.